Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. Today, we open our show with some highlights from the Democratic National Convention and the acceptance speech by Kamala Harris, who warns that Donald Trump is a threat to democracy, as well as highlights from a prominent Republican endorsing Harris and protests at the convention against the Israel-Gaza war. A judge has blocked the Finita Ranch development in Santee again, and we'll have details on why. The U.S. State Department has issued a travel warning for Americans in Lebanon, and local Congressman Daryl Issa's office is offering help for Americans needing help to evacuate. A bill to study healthcare discrimination in California is pending before the state legislature. Excessive heat has prompted closures of two popular county parks in East County. And from California News Service, a new study warning of effects called fire brain from toxic wildfire smoke. Plus, we'll have a special interview with Victor Contreras from Early California Speaks, bringing to life a historical character from California's past. El Cajon's City Council has approved putting a sales tax extension on the November ballot, and covered California premiums are going up. We'll have all these stories and more on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
Welcome to 2024 Talks. We're live from the Democratic National Convention in Chicago and are tracking the 2024 election process.
In many ways, Donald Trump is an unserious man, but the consequences of putting Donald Trump back in the White House are extremely serious.
Kamala Harris used her nomination acceptance to lay out a vision of genuine American freedom, but to also call out former President Donald Trump as a threat to it. The vice president, still little known by many viewers, sketched her early life and time as a prosecutor, motivated, she said, by a desire to protect the innocent. But her most passionate words were aimed at what she called Trump's authoritarian ambitions, made more dangerous by the lack of guardrails in a second term. The convention featured several Republicans who turned against Trump for similar reasons. Like many, former GOP Illinois Representative Adam Kinzinger spoke about the January 6th insurrection. He said he's endorsing Harris to defend truth and decency.
And I want to let my fellow Republicans in on the secret. The Democrats are as patriotic as us.
Kinzinger described Trump as a threat to American democracy, who was suffocating the soul of the Republican Party. While the convention was happening, Trump visited the southern border of Cochise County, Arizona. He teased an expected endorsement by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who was also in the state. Trump said the endorsement would be a great honor.
I can't say that, but I know we're in the same state, so we're not very far away, but I can't tell you that yet. No plans have been made at this moment.
In her speech, Harris talked about the war in Gaza, a painful issue mostly ignored by other speakers. She reaffirmed Israel's right to defend itself from terrorist attacks, but she also called for a ceasefire to end the terrible suffering of civilians and so the Palestinian people can realize their right to dignity, security, freedom, and self-determination. The Secretary of New Mexico's Democratic Party, Isaac Dakota Casados, says he trusts a Harris presidency to make peace.
When we have innocent individuals on both sides getting brutalized and murdered and killed, and those are things that I think we're always trying to find solutions. But solution always requires diplomacy.
Republican Vivek Ramaswamy made a surprise appearance. He said to talk with folks at the DNC about immigration and the economy. He also met with Gaza war protesters, but wasn't welcome. Many at the convention say they're ready for Harris to make history as the first mixed-race woman to be president. Sherry Brown is a Black South Carolina delegate who says the issue is deeply personal for her.
White males. I had a high school education, but not a college. I have a master's. They make more money than me. I've observed all throughout men take positions that women were qualified for but did not get.
I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
A judge has ruled that Santee City Council failed to follow its own rules on new development when council members approved Bonita Ranch, a project that would bring about 3,000 new homes to Santee. Judge Catherine Bacall ruled in favor of a legal challenge filed by three environmental groups led by Preserve Wild Santee, the same coalition that challenged the project back in 2020 on the grounds that an emergency wildfire evacuation plan for Bonita Ranch was inadequate. Bacall ordered Santee to rescind its approval of Bonita Ranch, which the City Council granted in 2020, and to revise its environmental report to account for emergency evacuations. After the City complied with that order, the Council approved the project again in 2022 and deemed it essential housing complying with recently passed state laws to encourage new housing construction. But now, Judge Bacall has ruled that the city illegally circumvented its own rules, which called for any new development triggering a change in its general plan to require approval from a majority of local voters. That rule was enacted via ballot initiative approved by the voters. Mayor John Minto says the latest ruling is still being discussed by attorneys for possible appeal, but that it appears to call into question existing state laws. He noted that Judge Bacall has ruled against multiple municipalities in California over new development proposals, and he says she's afraid of the environmental community and is unwilling to follow the rule of law to make the right decisions. But the plaintiffs say the judge got it right. Dan Silver, director of Endangered Habitats League, states, "We are pleased that the court saw through this transparent end run on the rights of Santee voters. Future development proposals for this property needs to be submitted to the voters." In addition to Endangered Habitats League, the plaintiffs include the Center for Biological Diversity and Preserve Wild Santee, an environmental advocacy group that has a long track record of opposing any development on the 2,600-acre Bonita Ranch. Van Collinsworth of Preserve Wild Santee says this ruling is another huge setback to the city's attempts to develop the rich wildlife habitat and very high fire hazard area of Bonita Ranch. "All of these attempts have failed for at least a quarter century. It's time to put this dangerous project proposal to rest once and for all," he concludes. Jeff O'Connor, vice president of Home Fed Corp., the project's developer since 2011, believes the city of Santee will likely appeal Bacall's ruling on the basis that the city was following state laws passed by the legislature and signed by Governor Gavin Newsom to create much-needed affordable housing. He notes that Bacall's ruling includes upholding the city's environmental impact report and its wildfire evacuation plan, the latest one, that is. O'Connor adds that HomeFed's plan would designate 150 units in the nearly 3,000-unit project as workforce housing, meaning those would be sold for below-market rate prices. But it's too early to say what that price range would be. The current median price for a single-family house in Santee is $803,000, according to the real estate firm Redfin. O'Connor adds that HomeFed is contributing $2.6 million to Santee's affordable housing program, as well as committing some $50 million toward expanding State Route 52 by an extra lane in each direction near Mass Boulevard as part of its mitigation plan for Bonita Ranch. If built, the project is estimated to bring at least 8,000 new residents to the city, which has a current population of about 60,000 people. Mayor Minto says that legal fees involving Bonita Ranch have been considerable over the years, but in this case, HomeFed has agreed to pay for those costs. The Carlsbad-based developer was acquired by the Jeffries Group and has no affiliation with former San Diego home lender HomeFed Bank, which failed in the early 1990s. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ in Santee, this is Miriam Raftery.
The U.S. State Department has issued a Level 4 advisory urging Americans not to travel to Lebanon, and for Americans in southern Lebanon, near the Syrian border, or in refugee settlements, to immediately depart. Those who do not leave should be prepared to shelter in place for a prolonged period due to escalating military actions between Israel and Hezbollah in Lebanon. After Hezbollah strikes in Israel, Israel launched an airstrike that killed a Hezbollah leader in Beirut. Hezbollah has vowed to retaliate. Hours later, a Hamas leader was killed by a bomb in Iran. Iran has blamed Israel and threatens to attack Israel in response, though Israel has not confirmed nor denied responsibility for the killing in Iran. Any attacks on Israel are expected to trigger a wider military response. On Thursday, Israeli fighter jets reportedly flew low over Beirut, producing sonic booms that scattered frightened residents, according to Reuters. For travelers and foreign nationals in Beirut, fleeing is becoming more difficult. Insurance companies have raised premiums due to unrest in the region, prompting Air France, Lufthansa, and other European airlines to halt flights into Beirut, NPR reported yesterday. Middle East Airlines is still flying, but there are not enough planes to accommodate all who seek to leave. There are fears that the Beirut airport could be targeted since Israel bombed the airport during a 2006 air and sea blockade. A British newspaper reported that Hezbollah has recently stockpiled missiles at the airport, though the Lebanese government denies this, and Western diplomats who toured the site reportedly saw no evidence of missiles stored there. San Diego Congressman Daryl Issa, who is of Lebanese descent, is providing the following guidance for Americans and Americans with family members in Lebanon. Staffers in ICE's office and other members of Congress can help with the process of obtaining passports or visas. Americans in Lebanon, or those here in the U.S. who want to be kept informed, can sign up for the State Department's Smart Traveler Enrollment Program to receive updated travel messages on Lebanon. The State Department advises people leaving Lebanon to avoid flying through Iran, Syria, or other countries with Level 4 alerts. Individuals who wish to depart should avail themselves of ticket options that do not necessarily take them to their preferred destination as the first stop. Rescue groups have arrived in Lebanon to assist stranded Americans and foreign nationals there. These include the Gray Bull Rescue Foundation, led by Brian Stern, a U.S. Army veteran and Navy Reserve officer, NPR reports. Stern previously led Project Dynamo, an organization that reportedly chartered aircraft and evacuated 7,000 U.S. citizens worldwide from conflict zones, including Afghanistan, Sudan, Haiti, and Israel, when the U.S. government was unable to do so. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
A bill headed to the state Senate floor this week would require California to start tracking discrimination in health care. Assembly Bill 3161 asks the State Department of Public Health to collect self-reported patient demographics from complaints at hospitals and long-term care facilities. Shalita Smith from Corona says she feels bias played a role in her treatment when she faced a life-threatening hemorrhage after childbirth at an Orange County hospital in 2007.
The emergency room doctor, he basically told the nurse, "We need her out of here. I want to discharge her." So she came in the room with the discharge papers and she said, "I'm scared for you." And I said, "No, I'm scared for myself." Luckily, I was able to stay. And if I would have went home, I would have bled to death. I wouldn't be here today.
The bill would also require hospital patient safety plans to specify methods to address racism and discrimination in healthcare, including procedures for staff to anonymously report instances of racial bias. Raina Granberry with the California Black Women's Health Project says she's heard of cases where patients felt that staff ignored them or discounted their level of pain.
Hearing a father come in and say, "We've asked the doctors for 7 hours to intervene and she laid there for 7 hours and bled to death." It is a pain that ripples through the community. It's crippling to our collective well-being to continue to experience these types of things.
Hospitals maintain that they offer the same high level of care for all patients, regardless of race. Anyema Obikea with the Black Women for Wellness Action Project says the data, when broken down by race, will tell a different story.
It's really important for patient safety plans to actually consider the role that some of our biases play in the quality of care that patients receive, particularly when they are people of color.
For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Due to triple-digit temperatures, two county parks will be closed for the month of August. They are El Capitan County Preserve in Lakeside and Mount Gower County Park in Ramona. These locations have difficult trails that end in isolated areas. They also offer very limited shade, which can lead to dangerous conditions during major heat events. They join two desert parks that are already closed for the summer due to extreme heat, Vallecito and Agua Caliente County Parks. Brian Albright, director of the County of San Diego Department of Parks and Recreation, says, "When we close park gates, it's to reduce health risks and related injuries caused by severe weather events, for guests as well as for our own team members who are called to assist in emergency situations. The closures also provide county parks and recreation staff an opportunity to conduct needed maintenance, including trail restoration, during the early mornings or evenings while it is cooler. There are more than 100 other county parks and preserves to explore during the month of August. If you do go out for a hike, be smart about it. Here are some safety tips to consider. Let someone know where you will be and when you plan to return. Hike with others, never alone. Leave your dog at home for difficult hikes. Even easy hikes might be too much for your dog when the air or ground are too hot, and dogs have died on local trails due to high heat. Take plenty of water to stay hydrated. Rangers recommend about a quart for every 2 to 3 miles. Wear sunscreen, a hat, and sunglasses. Take breaks in shade if possible. Take a fully charged mobile phone, map, and/or GPS to prevent getting lost or to help rescuers find you if you have an emergency. Wear lightweight, light-colored, ventilated clothing. Bring along a warm jacket if you plan to stay out after dusk. Wear sturdy shoes with traction for slippery rocks. Follow all posted safety rules. Bring ample food, a flashlight, first aid kit, multi-purpose tool, and a whistle. Know your limitations. Choose trails that match your level of physical fitness. For more information on county parks, visit sdparks.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
Mental health experts are sounding the alarm about fire brain, a condition caused by exposure to toxic wildfire smoke. One study found that wildfire smoke can cause brain inflammation that lasts for a month. Therapist Susie Dukes from Chico says the massive park fire is now re-traumatizing a community already devastated by the Camp Fire, which incinerated the nearby town of Paradise in 2018.
People are in kind of a constant state of stress, a feeling of being out of control, unable to prevent anything, and this deep-seated fear of losing yet again more things. And now the park fire has been triggering PTSD symptoms all over again.
A study released in July at the Alzheimer's Association conference found that exposure to wildfire smoke can raise the risk of being diagnosed with dementia. Families in need of mental health assistance can call the California Parent and Youth Helpline at 1-855-427-2736 or go online to live chat at caparentyouthhelpline.org. Dukes says the trained counselors at the helpline can help you get through an emotional crisis.
Reaching out and feeling like you belong to a community is the essential in healing. Calling to a helpline can be a way out of the terror because the human touch is essential in being able to reconnect and get your feet under you again.
Parents Anonymous, which runs the helpline, also offers free weekly support groups. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Arts and Music Spotlight.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. Today, my very special guest is Victor Contreras with Early California Speaks. He is here today to talk about some great new presentations available to bring local historical figures to life for local students, organizations, and events. So, Victor, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. I'm so honored to be here. I truly appreciate having the opportunity to meet your audience in this fashion. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Well, you're welcome. It's great to have you back on the show again. So tell us about your organization and its programs for bringing history to life. What are some of the types of presentations that you offer exactly, and what kind of places are you hoping to bring these programs?
Well, we started Early California Speaks in 2019, and it's a result of my direct ancestry and working with Old Town San Diego State Park.
Yeah.
I started working in Old Town San Diego State Park because it's a direct result of my mother. My mother was tapped, as many other people were that are descendants of early California and early San Diego, in the celebration of the 200th anniversary of San Diego. And so they were tapped to provide historical documents, family stories, et cetera, et cetera. It was as a direct result of the efforts of these San Diego locals. And by San Diego, I don't mean just the cities, this county, because we were obviously spread out and below the border, because back then there was no border. Okay. So as a direct result of the research and documents and artifacts and all that that were brought in for the San Diego celebration, which gave birth to the city, county, and state parks in Old Town San Diego.
Fantastic. So, and then I get that you're doing presentations at schools for California history and English classes on, and what else?
Well, I'm a retired teacher, so that you know, schools are close to my heart.
Yeah.
And of course, California history is close to my heart because of my family.
And you're an actor, so you also do theater classes.
Yes, I was the head of the theater department at the School of Performing Arts in Chula Vista for a long time. So I have those stripes, and I actually taught at Cal State San Marcos
as
well.
That's great.
So all of those things came into play. And so what I decided to do is to research real people that actually lived here in the 1700s and 1800s to tell their story in short formats. We do approximately 10 minutes. And then when we go to schools or whatever, then we open it up to Q&A. And
yeah. And you go in costumes. So you really, really bring it to life.
All of them are in period costumes. I'm not the only presenter, but we do period costumes. So we give it a very authentic feel.
Yeah. You have some of the women that we don't hear much about in the history books, but who are
well, one of the unique things about women, in particular in California, because California was progressive even then, okay? In Mexico and in the United States, it was not acceptable for women to drink in public, much less gamble. And in California, not only it was common,
it was
very acceptable. And one of the characters that we have, she tells her story because she had a rancho that was close to the mine fields of the gold rush.
Yeah.
So she dealt cards and had a little casino right there on a rancho.
That is amazing. And I understand it. For some of these programs, you also have study guides, you know, for the teachers if they want to do follow-up lessons and, you know, coaching on how to use them. That just sounds great. What age levels is that for?
Well, to be perfectly frank, is my experience as an educator is, well, we focus on California history in the fourth grade. Mm-hmm. And you can be sitting in a fourth grade classroom and you've got this student who reads at a high school level and this student that's learning how to read.
Yeah.
And they're sitting right next to each other.
Exactly.
So that we arm the teachers with three study guides at three different levels, regardless of whether we're going to a university or to an elementary school.
Excellent.
So that the teacher can use what best fits their students.
What a great idea. Now, I know you got a super talented team. Can you tell us about the background of some of the other participants?
I am extremely fortunate to have recruited and have trained and prepared some wonderful people. Some of the people have worked as docents, either as volunteers or whatever, mm-hmm. at state parks. Mm-hmm. Some of them are educators or past educators, retired. Some of them are authors. So we come from a wide range of backgrounds mm-hmm. besides, because I not only do I direct them and prepare them for the scripts, but they're directly taught on the history. So after any presentation, if the audience does Q&A, they're prepared to answer a wide range of questions about that character or that period of time or any part of in relationship to their monologue. So that whenever we go to a presentation, mm-hmm. we're well armed beyond the monologue of information.
You've got teachers among your troop, I understand, and
correct.
People that were board members of SAG-AFTRA, the actors.
Three of them
union.
Have been elected SAG-AFTRA board members.
Great.
One of them is the past president of the San Diego SAG-AFTRA local.
Oh my goodness,
so
what talent.
They have stripes. We have stripes.
Yeah, and then you've got another one who was, a former president of the Hispanic Public Relations Organization? And
he's actually not a presenter, but he's part of our administrative team.
Okay, and then a casting director?
And a casting director who's, she likes to take on the title of producer.
Okay, there you go.
she actually cast the last Luis Valdez play that was a full-length play in Los Angeles. So obviously she works with big-name people.
Yeah. So how is this whole thing funded? Are there sponsorship opportunities, grants, or do people hire Early California Speaks to come and do these programs, Victor?
Generally speaking, people hire us. Oftentimes it's a company or something. But one of the things that's really attractive mm-hmm. is somebody chooses to be a sponsor mm-hmm. to have a presentation at a school. Mm-hmm. And I suggest you talk to your tax consultant to verify or whatever. It's a tax deduction because it's a gift to a school.
I imagine you could do that if it was a nonprofit organization too, and someone wanted to
correct.
Sponsor that as the entertainment or educational component for a nonprofit.
Correct.
That's awesome. And
now, one of the things that because we have a long history, you and I, we've known each other for many years.
We have. Victor and I were both on the old Heartland board a long time ago. Heartland was our parent nonprofit when we first started East County Magazine, and he's done a couple of these readings on our show before and one of our events before. So we
what I like to offer
everything Victor does.
All of your listeners, and I'll give you my direct line because we have offices in Tijuana, San Diego, and Los Angeles. So mm-hmm. we cover a lot of geography.
Wow.
I'll give you my direct phone number.
Okay.
It's 619-301-8126. So any of your listeners, if they contact me directly, I'll offer them a 10% discount.
Oh my goodness, that's so generous.
Hey,
well,
I love you guys.
We appreciate that. I'm sure our listeners out there for KNSJ will appreciate that as well. And I guess you can't get the discount through the website, but if you want to go there and read more and get more information about Early California Speaks, just go to earlycaliforniaspeaks.com.
Correct.
So now, listeners, we have a real treat in store for you. Victor is going to give us a dramatic performance as an example of one of the real-life characters that he brings to life. And I'm going to ask you, Victor, if you can tell us a little bit about your character and how he ties in with your own background, your family tree, your very colorful family tree.
Actually, this is a direct ancestor of mine.
One of your several famous direct ancestors, yeah.
And he was a member of the Spanish expedition that came here to form the missions.
Ah.
So going back to the 1700s, mm-hmm. okay? And as many people recognize, every time they created a mission, they had to have a military presence there to protect the mission.
Right.
Okay. So he just by chance was designated to be the part of the Presidio here.
What was his name?
Andres Cota. Were three Cota brothers. So he was one of three brothers that were all part of the expedition. So Andres Cota is a direct ancestor of mine. And a lot of the information that I'm going to share in the monologue, mm-hmm. you can go to history books in Mexico and history books in the U.S., and they don't tell you some of the things that I'm going to share in the monologue. For example, a preview, we say the Spanish expedition, which gives you the impression that they were all Spaniards. And they were not.
Interesting.
The officers were Spaniards and the priests were Spaniards, but the soldiers were Mexicans or Native Americans from Mexico.
Wow. Well, without further ado, listeners, we're going to introduce Victor Contreras with a dramatic presentation bringing history to life.
Bienvenida, bienvenida. When they say you to come to meet one of the Spanish soldiers from the expedition that helped establish the Misiones de California, you were expecting to see somebody dressed in a uniform. Pues I'm retired now. I have a rancho and I raise cattle, ganado, as did most of us when we retired. Although we developed our style of clothing that was unique to California, they were based in many parts like the uniforms of the officers. So they look a little like the uniform. And they have decorations on the sides and down the legs. And we have the sash. This was all copying from the uniforms of the officers. And so this is how we develop our clothes. Mi nombre es Andrés Cota. I had 12 of mis hermanos, 2 of my brothers. There were also soldados in the expedition. We were called leather jackets, so soldados del cuero. And we served under the Spanish flag to settle California. Please do not confuse us with being Spanish. Those who were born from Spain would never accept this. And they always looked down on us from Spain. And we were, in the minds of them, inferior to those that had direct bloodlines from Spain. You see, the Spanish had been in Mexico for 200 years before they sent an expedition to colonize and build pueblos here in California. Although they had already claimed California as part of their land, they didn't establish a colony or have a physical live presence here in California. So they come with the expedition to the West Coast. Now, the priests and the officers of the expedition were Spanish, but the soldiers, they were from Mexico, and most of them were Mexicanos or indigenous Indians from Mexico. We all wore our hair long and tied together to the back as a tribute to our Indian or Native American heritage. We did not totally abandon our roots. The Spanish recruited us to serve in the expedition to the West Coast with promises of great fortune and personal gain for taking our lives to this new land. So I joined the Spanish military, as did my 2 brothers, and we went off to settle the West Coast. The Spanish had long claimed the lands along the coast, but they had very little time or people there. The Spanish crown was concerned about the other countries trying to gain land in the New Americas, in particular the Russians, that were already starting settlements up to the north and blurring the lines between their territories and the Spanish territories. So Spain was very concerned and wanted to put a military presence to defend against the Russians in particular, but anybody in general. This was making the division between Spain and Russia very blurred. The Spanish had been in Mexico a long time and had brought the word of Jesucristo, Jesus Christ, to the New World. My family had accepted the Catholic Church many generations ago, although we sometimes held on to some of our previous beliefs and traditions as Native Americans as well. We mixed them as we ourselves became mixed with the Spaniards. In much of Mexico, we developed a class system, with those with more Spanish blood to be at the top and those with more Native blood at the bottom. Soldados were elevated, a little higher than their bloodlines, but still not as high as those of Spanish blood. Many Natives and myself joined the Spanish military because of this and to have stable work. For those who accepted to come to the expedition on the West Coast, we expected to have a new life and had great expectations. In Mexico, we had learned that many tribes and particular had similar gods and religious beliefs, but it did not account for all peoples. The Christian faith tied all peoples around the world under one God. This was different than native languages. The word of God was written in Latin. This is a language from a long time ago, very old. And the only peoples that knew this language were the priests. The priests, they would translate the word of God to us and explain to us so that we could understand. We came to convert the natives along the West Coast of the word of the true God. We came with priests so they too could learn about the true God as part of the new society we were going to create. We wanted to center our new society around the church, so we built the towns around the misiones, the missions we created, so the church and God were the center of our new society. In keeping with the teachings of the church, we gathered from the dominance of the Spanish, the new order did away with much of the class system that developed due to bloodlines in Mexico. So we did not follow this in California. We accepted people more on the basis of if you accepted the Catholic faith or not versus bloodlines and the true teaching of God in the new areas that Mexico came from. Conversion to the natives was not a simple matter. We recruited local natives to be the guides, and they became a major connection for us between our expedition and the tribes. In fact, the West Coast had more Native American tribes in small geographical areas than any parts of Mexico or the entire United States. Then we come, so we had two goals. One was to establish military forces and secure the region for Spain. But the second, maybe the more important, was to teach the natives the word of God. We are going to establish misiones and bring civilized society to the new lands, to teach the natives as our forefathers were taught, the guidance of the Catholic Church. As men who came from, and in many cases still felt, to be who we are as children of the one true God, but we would help the natives realize that there is a world far beyond their experience that they did not know, that we were all children of the one true God. Their tribes would be introduced to the larger world experience. We would also teach them about doing and living a life more closely approved by the heavens and not relying so much on hunting, but to grow crops and to raise animals rather than just hunt for them. The priests would also teach values and ways of being. The wrong behaviors of stealing and lying would be seen and would be taught to be against God's will. The church would also teach a method of forgiving and regaining God's favor so we could not only introduce the natives to a larger world, but also to the universe of the one true God. In many ways, the Christian teachings put the whole world in perspective and united it. Most of the native religions or explanations encompass their experience and only themselves as recognized people. Things were going to change what they knew forever, and they would join the larger world community. And this is what we were about.
Thank you, Victor. That was a fascinating reading about one of the Spanish soldiers, or soldiers with the early Spanish expedition founding the missions. It's really amazing to hear that come to life.
Yes, and there's little, and I hope people picked up on little details that are shared in the story that are not normally covered in history books.
Yeah, it was really interesting. So who are some of the other characters that Early California Speaks can bring to life when they do these presentations for schools and other organizations?
Well, we haven't stopped. We're still writing and creating things, but we have 8 stock stories that can be easily found on our website. And they include, of course, Andres Cota, which you just heard their story, but Bonifacio Lopez, who speaks about the cattle industry back in the day. Bartolo Riso, which was an Italian who came to California because Italy at that time was the toy capital of the world. And as they had, you know, AKA Pinocchio, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
Okay. They overdid it. So they had too many toy makers. And then they started migrating to the United States. So Bartolo came to the East Coast. And again, too many Italians. So then he came and became the toy maker here in San Diego.
Interesting.
So he had no competition. Leonardo Cota. And I call him Captain Leonardo Cota because he was integrally involved in the Mexican-American War.
Ah.
And as many of you know, California was split. We were pretty much 50-50 as those that supported the United States and those who supported Mexico. He actually was one of the soldiers. He was a capitán, so he was an officer in the Mexican Cavalry.
Ah.
Now, the California Cavalry at that time was considered one of, if not the world's best cavalry, because they didn't get on horses when they joined the service. They grew up with horses and they were riding their own horses. So needless to say, they had great command of their horses. Maria Ortega is a woman. Now, we uniquely had a situation in California that was different than our host countries of Mexico or the United States. We were liberal then, let alone now, to use a political phrase.
I thought it was fascinating, by the way, in the monologue that you just read, that Russia was causing problems here even way back then.
Yes.
But
one of the things that was true in Mexico and the United States is it was not publicly acceptable for women to drink in public, much less gamble.
Yeah.
It was 1,000% acceptable in California. And women went to cantinas and bars. And Maria, she actually had a rancho that was close to the gold mine fields. Mm-hmm. And so she ran a casino dealing cards from her own rancho. So as a matter of fact, she starts off her monologue by inviting the audience, would you like to play?
Oh, what a character.
And then we have Joaquin Murrieta. For those of you who don't know, Joaquin Murrieta is the real life California bandit that Zorro is based on.
Fascinating.
And so the real life story, and one of the things that I like to point out, you've all seen it in movies over and over and over again, that somebody gets cornered on a cliff, be them being chased by Indians or a posse or the bat, whatever. And the guy gets the horse to jump off the cliff into the river.
Which seems completely unbelievable, but.
In real life, that may have happened 2-3 times max. You've seen it in movies many more times than that. But Joaquin Murrieta actually did
that. He actually did it. And the horse survived.
And he.
Or do we know?
No, they both survived.
Wow. That's incredible.
So Juan Ramon Cota is another character. Now, for those of you who are familiar with San Diego history, the most famous gunfight happened in Old Town. Mm-hmm. One of the players.
Well, one of the most famous gunfights, we have the old Campo gunfight right out here in East County that a lot of people don't know about, but that's a whole other story.
Yeah, well, I was talking about in San Diego.
The city. Yeah,
well, in the
city. What became the city, yeah.
Yeah, in the city.
Okay.
And Juan Ramon Cota at the time was a teenager. Like 15 years old, mm-hmm. But we portray him as an adult, so he's recalling what he saw. So he was an actual person to witness the gunfight. Mm-hmm. So he talks about it as an observer rather than a participant.
Yeah, and then speaking of gunfights, the old gunfight at the OK Corral in Tombstone, Arizona, Wyatt Earp, a lot of people don't know, came to San Diego at one point, and he's also one of the characters you bring to life. Tell us about that.
A lot of people don't realize that Wyatt Earp actually was here for 5 years.
Yeah.
And one of the things that he, of course, we know him as a lawman in the OK Corral gunfight, but he was also incredibly into playing poker. Okay. And so within the 5 years that he was here, he opened 5 establishments. Why? Because everybody wanted to play poker. Win or lose, to say, I played poker with Wyatt Earp.
That's just amazing. Well, thank you so much, Victor, for sharing so many of these fascinating stories from early California. Again, listeners, if you tuned in late, we've been speaking with Victor Contreras of Early California Speaks. It's an organization that you can find more about at earlycaliforniaspeaks.com, and they specialize in bringing these historical characters from San Diego County's past to life for schools and other organizations, you know, nonprofits, acting groups, anyone that wants to bring them in.
Victor. So we perform sometimes just for entertainment, and we got brought it in for, as a matter of fact, I think our last private gig was at somebody's 70th birthday party. So we didn't pass out study guides there.
What fun.
So we do it for entertainment purposes or for educational purposes.
And speaking of both entertainment and education, Victor is going to be doing a presentation live for East County Magazine at our upcoming Fall Fiesta, which is going to be on September 11th right here in La Mesa. And we're going to have an article up on that very soon at eastcountymagazine.org, or you can reach out to me at editor@eastcountymagazine.org. You can also reach out to Victor at his phone number. Again, your phone, Victor, is?
My direct line, because we, for the company, you know, we have numbers in Tijuana, San Diego, and Los Angeles, because mm-hmm. we cover all of that area. And some of our presentations are actually available in Spanish.
Oh, nice.
Okay, so that we're not limited to not all of them. Wyatt Earp didn't speak Spanish, so he doesn't speak Spanish. We don't force that onto Wyatt. But some of the presentations are available in Spanish and in English. But my direct line for your listeners is so that you don't get caught up in our San Diego or LA or Tijuana phone number is 619-301-8126. And if you mention the magazine, I'll offer you a 10% discount.
Very nice. So just say you heard about this on the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ. And, you know, I think it's great in an era, especially when we are seeing all of this censorship of real history, you know, sort of the whitening of the history books, to see Native American voices, Spanish voices brought to life, you know, really in a very inclusive way so people can learn more about the rich history of our area and all of the people who lived here in the 1700s and 1800s.
One of the things that I find particularly amazing, not just in California, but throughout the Southwest, so many of the names of places are literally in Spanish. And then people forget, oh, Los Angeles is a Spanish word.
Yes, we can tell the non-Californians when they come here and they talk about El Cajon and La Jolla, right? Well, Victor, we are out of time, but I really want to thank you so much for taking the time. Victor Contreras from Early California Speaks to join us here today on the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Our East County Magazine radio show needs volunteers, and so does our award-winning news website at eastcountymagazine.org. If you would like to help write scripts, learn reporting skills, research topics for our news team, or have an on-air voice to be the media, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617.
Covered California announced that the average premium for plans on the marketplace will rise 7.9% in 2025, but subsidies are expected to blunt the impact and even lower costs for many consumers. The Biden-Harris administration's Inflation Reduction Act caps premiums at 8.5% of income for many and goes even further for those with low incomes. Rachel Lynn Gish with the nonprofit Health Access California says the state has put the federal funds to good use.
Because of this financial help, California has been able to take even further steps to lower costs for many Covered California enrollees by eliminating deductibles and reducing copays for many health services, such as doctor's visits, lab work, generic drugs.
However, the enhanced premium subsidies in the IRA will expire next year, sending costs soaring unless Congress extends them. If not, Gish expects premiums to rise 60% to 80%, costing thousands more per year. Opponents of the extension cite the need to limit federal spending. Gish says if the federal premium help ends, people could also start seeing much higher deductibles.
Without the federal assistance, California stands to lose $1.7 billion in assistance, which the state can only backfill a fraction of, which means consumers could again see deductibles as high as $5,000 or more.
Other big changes are on the way. Starting November 1st, about 40,000 income-eligible DACA recipients in California will be able to apply for premium subsidies through Covered California. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
El Cajon's City Council has unanimously voted to put a half-cent sales tax extension on the November 5th ballot. If approved by voters, the measure would continue a half-cent tax that is set to otherwise expire. The tax has generated more than $13 million annually for El Cajon's general fund, and at least 75% of these funds support the city's public safety operations. If voters choose to pass Measure J continuing this sales tax, significant budget cuts would be avoided, including but not limited to essential services, such as firefighters and paramedics, police officers, street maintenance, including pothole repair and repaving, and maintaining stormwater and sewage systems. When comparing El Cajon to other San Diego cities, El Cajon receives a smaller percentage of its property tax, which is not enough to sustain the community's needs. El Cajon receives 11% of its property tax earned, while Carlsbad gets 29%, according to Councilman Steve Goble. Over the last two decades, City Manager Graham Mitchell says residents' demands have increased due to enormous expenditures on new unforeseen issues such as rising homelessness. Mitchell says El Cajon is the leanest-run city in San Diego County, adding, "We also know we have to be lean because we get less property tax than everyone else." Residents' comments from four recent town hall meetings on the issue help city staff prioritize areas for expenditure cuts if the ballot measure does not pass. Those include reducing personnel by at least 20 positions, eliminating several parks and rec centers, and even ending some citywide events such as America on Main Street and Haunt Fest. The Measure J draft outlines two safeguards for taxpayers. One is the creation of an independent oversight committee, which would include a mix of residents, business representatives, accounting professionals, and representation from a taxpayer protection association. This committee did not exist for the 2008 sales tax measure. If the half-cent sales tax measure is approved by voters for continuation, it would be set to expire April 1st in 2049. Deputy Mayor Phil Ortiz acknowledged, "I don't think anybody on this council relishes extending the tax," but he added, "there are practical realities when it comes to local government." Mayor Bill Wells agreed. He reminded his constituents that when representing a public office of this size, it requires politicians to make bipartisan decisions outside of party policies, because the reality is that situations arise and force a change to this perspective, the Republican mayor said. Councilmember Gary Kendrick and City Manager Mitchell highlighted that all four East County cities have similar sales tax measures on their ballots in November, and the San Diego Taxpayers Association is endorsing three of those four, including El Cajon. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world.
This is Miriam Raftery with a People Power report. It's back to school time, and in a heartwarming display of community spirit, the Lemon Grove Improvement Council, Lemon Grove Lions Club, and the Lemon Grove Forward Club joined forces for a special mission, stuffing school supplies into backpacks for local students. With the new school year around the corner, the importance of preparation can't be overstated. Together, these dedicated organizations prepared about 200 backpacks filled with essential supplies, all destined for homeless students in the Lemon Grove area. The Lemon Grove School District identified the students most in need and also is assisting in distributing the backpacks. This initiative ensures that students facing challenging circumstances can start the school year with the tools they need to succeed. It's a powerful reminder that when the community comes together, residents can make a difference in the lives of those who need it most.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.